Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Greg Fitzsimmons talks about getting ripped off by an agent.
There were so many comics that the agents would, they would rip you off, basically. And there was a guy at the time named Billy Downs. And he would just fuck with you. He'd call you up and he'd be like, hey, big guy, I got a gig for you. It's up in Maine. You got to pick up the headliner. You got to share a hotel room with the other opener. And you get half off dinner, $150. You want it? And then you'd be like, oh God. And you'd be like, all right, I'll do it. And you go, it's canceled.
Today on the show, comedian Greg Fitzsimmons talks about getting ripped off by an agent. Stay close.
Hey, why am I yelling at you people? It's me. It's Greg Fitzsimmons. And you're listening, if you didn't know, you're listening to Storyworthy. I don't know why you wouldn't know that. You clicked on it.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 10 and a half years, or you're a first-time listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian Ant. Now, do you know Ant, Greg?
I'm familiar with him, yeah.
Yeah. He was on the show last week, and, you know, I've been trying to catch up with him for years because he's one of these comedians. He's been in the game for a long, long time, and he's had a lot of success.
Sure.
And it was such a good conversation, and it was about his sobriety. And it's intense, man. I got to tell you, he was emancipated from his parents at the age of 16 and already doing coke, obviously marijuana and drinking. Do you remember, Greg, because we're about the same age, do you remember back in the 70s how everybody had a bar in their house?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a bar in our house.
What was that all about?
It was unbelievable. And of course, as a kid, you would take a shot and add a shot of water. So your parents would have a dinner party and everybody would think that they were cheap because they were serving such watered down drinks.
And that's exactly what we talked about. He talked about his parents having guests over and he'd watch them order a vodka tonic and they'd like take a sip and they'd be like, what is this? You know, that is right. So funny. But for some reason, everybody had a full bar with like vermouth and schnapps,
yeah,
and Glenfiddich and like the Crown one. And anyway, Ant was a really great guest and he's doing so well now and he's super fit and just a great guy. So I was super happy to speak with him last week. So go back, listen to that, you guys, but not today, because today I'm here with another person I've been really dying to meet, truly, comedian Greg Fitzsimmons. And he brings forth the topic, getting ripped off by an agent. Getting ripped off by an agent. One time when I was, I mean, I'm still kind of green, even though I've been doing this 24 years. But one time I had this manager and he said he would do one thing and he didn't.
Yeah.
And I was so upset. Like I took it so personally. And I remember going to his office and like taking a whole box of these VHS tapes that I had made with his name on the label and the phone number he told me. And now it was different and it was different on the tape. And I spent all this money and I just put the whole box down there. And I said, you're fired. I had like the receipt on it. It was like $180 of VHS tapes. You know, you had to go to Hollywood and make it up. It was so complicated.
It was probably a lot of money for you back then too, right?
It still is.
Yeah.
I mean, right. You know, to an extent, I don't want to get ripped off. I'm from Pittsburgh, right. You know, I'm not.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm anxious to hear your story. This is going to be great. But I have to tell you, I listen to so many things that you're on because you really are and have been on so much content that I personally take in, like Howard Stern, obviously, and Adam Carolla. And right now you're doing four different podcasts.
No, three.
I thought your Sunday papers went to Thursday.
Yeah, we ended up dropping Thursday. It was too much. It was too much. I was trying to write a script and I realized I was spending all of my time doing pod. Plus then, you know, like you said, I'm doing other people's podcasts on top of it. And it was just getting to where I was sick of my own voice.
I might sick of your voice, but you have been on a lot. Do you call that overexposure?
It does. Not according to my
bank account.
I'm not hitting as many bonuses as I should be for the amount of times I've, I've been on, I just did my 21st time on Rogan's show. Some people do Rogan once and it like catapults them. And I just keep going back, but
that is so great. Wait, do you fly down to Texas now?
No. I did it here. He flies in. Sometimes he's in LA once in a while.
Oh, that's smart on his part, because I did hear he was.
He's living in Austin now. Yeah.
Right. But I heard he was flying people down to record too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Well, boy, oh boy, those numbers don't lie. He can do anything he wants.
Yeah, I know.
So anyway, you do a lot of content, but I love it. And it's all very different. You know, Childish with Alison Rosen, that's, you know, basically she's a parent of babies. You're a parent of teens. So that's right. Parenting kind of a thing. That's very specific. And that's funny, by the way. I have been asked a couple times why I don't do a parenting podcast, because I have a little girl. Well, she's 14.
Little girl. It gets stuck in your head. They get stuck at a certain age. You forget. I think the hardest thing in parenting is adjusting who you're talking to, because you can start to fixate and treat them like they're younger than they really are. And they really resent that.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Well, I was asked a few times, you know, why I'm not doing a parenting podcast. And I remember saying very specifically, because I'm only doing this one time. And all I care about is the age of my kid. So if my child is 3 and you want to talk about 3-year-olds, I'll do that. But I'm over babies or whatever. Like now my girl's 14. I don't want to talk about babies. I don't want to talk about that.
Right, right.
So it's kind of funny. You know, I'm not a generous enough person, I think, to do a full over parenting podcast.
Right. I think it's what you said, though, because Allison covers the young ones and I cover the old ones. We're able to split duties.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I like that very much. And then you've been doing you've been doing Sunday papers with Mike Gibbons. Mike Gibbons makes me laugh because you've known him since college, 35 years.
Yeah, we've been best friends for a long time. He was my best man. I was his best man. And, you know, we live right near each other. Our kids are the same. Our daughters are really good friends. And our fathers were friends back in the Bronx, back in like, you know, the 50s.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. That's so interesting. I did listen to a show with you guys, and you were talking about how your dad would go up to Rao's, that Italian restaurant.
He died at Rao's.
Right. That's right. Oh my gosh. And he was only like 52 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit.
That's my father. You know how existential it is to outlive your father and to be at an age that he never got to? And you picture him as dad. You're looking up to him. You know, you're watching him get old. And then to think I'm older, it's trippy.
Yeah, that's very odd. Yeah, that's very odd. 52 is very young.
Yeah.
I had this girl on my podcast before, Rena Strober. I don't know if you know her. She's a singer, a Broadway singer, and just an amazing talent. She was at Rao's. She told her story on this show. She was at Rao's and she was singing when somebody got shot and murdered in the club, right? In like the front of the room, and she was in the back.
Yeah.
And when they went and interviewed everybody in the restaurant who was there, like witnesses, they would all begin their testimony with, the girl had just started singing. The girl had just started singing. And it was Rena, you know, she was the one who was performing.
Yeah.
When the guy got shot, you know, and then I heard the gunshot.
Yeah.
And so she became like the girl who was singing. And then they did big articles on her. Yeah, I mean, it was memorable, very memorable.
Well, it's interesting because they didn't have a stage there. But what would happen is people would eat dinner. And then the guy who was the manager, why am I forgetting his name?
Tony.
Can't remember his name. No, we should have been. But he would stand up and he would sing an old Sinatra song or a Vic Damone song, and then other people would stand up and sing. So it wasn't like a showroom. It was just very spontaneous. It was like being at what you'd picture the greatest Italian family dinner. And the food is amazing.
That's exactly how Rena described it. And it's just, it just sounds so Sopranos, you know?
Yeah. Well, you can't get a reservation there. It's literally, you got to know somebody to get a table. And the people that have tables, like my father had a table,
wow,
which meant the first Tuesday of every month, he had a table. And that's how all the tables worked. They were regulars, and they got a four top or a two top, depending on who they were. And if you were like, I heard stories about Sylvester Stallone showed up one night.
Wow.
Wanted to walk in, and they were like, sorry. Like, they didn't give a shit.
Wow. And your dad was kind of famous in town. I mean, everybody knew him. They would yell out and stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, he was a big radio announcer, like us. I went into the family business. And
did they call him Fitz as well?
They called him Fitz. And we had season tickets to the Mets and the Giants. And we'd go, every time we were in a crowd, people yell, hey, Fitz, hey, Fitz. And it was like the coolest feeling. Like, my dad is such a cool guy. He'd go into any bar. It was always, he grew up in the city. He lived there his whole life. And he was just like probably the most charismatic person that I've ever known in my life. He just lit up a room. Everybody loved him.
Wow. Did he ever go into any politics at all?
He was always on like he was a member of the Friars Club, and he was the scribe, which was like, he was on the board of governors and he was in charge of writing the letters to the members in the, and then he belonged to a country. When he made some money, he joined a country club. And then of course he had to get on the board of that. Like he loved running things and
being involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Cause you know, there's the people that lead and the people that follow. And he was a leader. Yeah. I love that.
He was a leader. He was a real alpha, and he treated everybody the same, but you know, it was tough though, because he was an alcoholic, and when he came home, it was a different experience than what you saw him like in public. When he came home, it all came crashing down.
Oh,
and he
shit.
Got very dark, and he isolated in his den, and he just read, and it was more fun to be out with him than it was to be home with him.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Back then it wasn't, you know, getting mental health care wasn't popular. You know, now I feel like, you know, you could pop a couple of Prozac, clear that right up. I mean, maybe not, but.
Well, I think he had some real damage. He'd had some real trauma as a kid, and I think he didn't want to deal with it. And, you know, he died young because he smoked 3.5 packs a day.
Wow.
And drank every day, and he just wore himself down, basically.
Was the smoking in the house, right? Yeah.
Oh my God. Our house, we were, you know, it was the 70s. We had shag carpets. We had paisley curtains and paisley couch, and everything
and
would
the
have
wallpaper too. Wallpaper was crazy.
Wallpaper and stucco. And my mom embraced it. It was like the set of Mad Men. It really was like the set of Mad Men. As a matter
that
of fact,
that is so cool.
Dan Draper's house in Mad Men was Ossining, which was the next town over from Tarrytown. So that train ride into the city was the same. The decor was the same. The drinking, the smoking, and driving in the car. I mean, we'd be in the car with the windows up in the winter, and my mom would be smoking too.
Oh,
I had fucking asthma.
Oh God, did they not associate that?
No. Are you kidding?
Well, it was like how nobody even thought getting sunburned was a problem. We all purposefully got sunburned.
Yeah, we didn't use sunblock. Hell no.
We laid on silver blankets.
Wait, are you Irish?
No, Italian.
Oh, really? Well, Blackburn is Italian?
Dude, I'm American at the end of the day.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, my father knows English, right? Blackburn, Lancashire, the Blackburn Rovers, maybe. Anyway.
Right.
But my mother was Tassadori, so that was the Italian part. And
I don't know.
But I'm from
Was she a good cook?
You know, my mother because see, I grew up, you know, the youngest of six. And so there were eight of us in a 1,000-foot house. So she would have to like put like a box of pasta and a can of tomato paste and duct tape. And then she would make the food somehow and feed eight of us.
Yeah. Wow.
If she'd had the ingredients that she, you know, that would make a good meal, I think it would have been a little different.
She could have done it. Yeah. But she didn't have the time.
The time, the money. It's all right. It's all good. Yeah. So now she's 85 and she makes lasagna. So there.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Does she live in Pittsburgh still?
Yeah. Same house I grew up in.
People don't leave Pittsburgh.
No.
Pittsburgh, do you know it's the oldest city in America? Did you know that?
I thought I would have said Philadelphia.
Well, Philly's got a lot of colleges, and I guess Pittsburgh does too, but Philly's got a ton of colleges, and people seem to stay there. There's a lot of yuppies.
Yeah, but does that have to do with the oldest city?
It's that people don't leave. Nobody moves out.
Right. But were you trying?
They just...
Right. No, I know what you're saying. I have all my brothers and sisters there, but I'm saying like, when you said the oldest city, what does oldest mean? Oh, you mean, chronologically.
Yeah. Sorry.
I did know that.
Yeah.
I did know that because Allegheny County, where I'm from, has more senior citizens than Dade County in Florida.
Wow.
A lot of senior citizens and a lot of retirement homes and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the rest of the Northeast, they all move down to Florida when they retire. But Pittsburgh, for some reason, they just like, nah. It's not leaving.
It's very comfortable and it's very inexpensive. And, you know, usually your sister lives across the street or your aunt lives down the way or you share the backyard with your brother. And then there's a bar in every hamlet.
Yeah.
So right. I could see how comfortable it can be, especially now with like shopping malls in terms of like everything being the same. Do you know what I mean? Back in the 70s, we didn't have all the choices, but now everybody has the same choices.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
Anyway, listen, I'm super excited to hear your story. But before we get to Greg's story, you guys, I did want to remind you that we are playing Story Smash live and streaming every Friday night on Facebook. And I got to tell you, you've got to play, Greg. It's so funny. Story Smash, the storytelling game show. We did it for 3 years at the Improv, sold out once a month, sold out every month, once a month for about 3 years. And then the pandemic, but we're back and Blanket Patch is on every week. Danny Zucker's on most weeks. This week, Wayne Fetterman's on and it's going to be a blast. You guys, it's such a fun show. Please, you've got to tune in to Story Smash, the storytelling game show. It's public on Facebook and YouTube, so you don't even have to have accounts and there's no tickets involved. Check it out. Go to storysmashshow.com. You'll see more information. And, oh man, it's so fun. You know what I was doing this morning? I was booking like the next 3 months. And so like, I'll put it out to all my contacts, comics, people that I know that want to play, not the judges. That's a different thing, but we have four contestants each game. And I shouldn't have done this right before we recorded, but I did anyway. And I hit, you know, go and I put out the dates and then I start getting in dozens and dozens of people that will play. And then I just put them in the graph and fill up the spots. And it's just such a fun.
That's awesome. That sounds like fun. Yeah, have me on. I'll do it. This is like the second time I've ever been booked on Twitter, by the way.
Oh, I've never seen that yet.
Didn't you book me on Twitter?
No, Oh, yeah, I did.
You did. Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
I told him I'm such an idiot. All right. Anyway, you guys, I'm so excited. He's here right now. You've heard him talking, Greg Fitzsimmons. He is the host of the hugely popular Fitzdog Radio. That's the number one podcast, Fitzdog.
Yeah. Right.
That's the baby. That's your ground control. That's the base right there. And
That's the Blackish. Before there was Grownish, before there was Couple-ish, that's my Blackish.
That's your Blackish. That's right. By the way, my daughter and I love all those shows. They're so good. They really are.
They're so well written. They're just really tight, funny shows.
So good. And you know, the female lead, her name is, it's escaping me. Her sister's Alicia Keys.
No kidding.
Yeah, they're sisters. Wow. Can you believe the talent in that family?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I love that show. Then, like we talked about, you've got the other shows, Sunday Papers with Mike Gibbons, and then you also have Childish with Alison Rosen. And you have been a regular on Conan O'Brien and Jimmy Kimmel, and you've had more than 50 visits to the Howard Stern Show. That is like, I love Howard so much. You know, there's that core of people who have been with him, and that's me. I've been with him since...
He was always huge in Pittsburgh.
87, 88, all those years.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why, but I can remember going down and doing shows in Pittsburgh and like selling everything out, and they were all like, Baba Booey, hey now. It was like...
We still do that.
Yeah.
I still do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So does that ever become not special?
No, I love it. I mean, there's no better fans than Stern fans. There's no better crowd than a Stern crowd. And I mean, I remember I did Carnegie Hall with Artie Lang one time. And so I think Jim Florentine went up, and then somebody else went up, and then I went up. And I mean, I'm standing, I'm from New York City. So to be standing on stage at Carnegie Hall was like mind blowing.
Forget it.
So I do like two jokes. It's going great. And then the door opens in the back and Howard Stern enters and he walks down the aisle, down to the front. And of course, nobody's paying attention to me. Just this roar. Everybody's going nuts. And then he sits down and then I had to deal with it. So I made fun of him for a little bit and then I got back into my set.
How do you pick up the pieces there?
Yeah, I actually love that. I'm like Mahomes. I like when the play gets broken up and you got to improvise and scramble a little bit.
Patton Oswalt told me a story similarly once. He was hosting the Golden Globes or SAG Awards, something. And he's on stage and he's trying to tell these jokes. And then Brad and Angelina walk in. It's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah, it's over. I remember... Patton got attacked by an audience in Pittsburgh once. Did you ever hear that story?
No, I didn't.
It was while Bush was in office and he was doing Bush jokes. And I guess Pittsburgh can skew a little conservative.
Sure.
And they went nuts and they like charged the stage. They had to like hide in the manager's office for like an hour until they got rid of people. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
I know.
Wow, I'm going to ask about that. That's I play tennis with Matt a lot, his brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's so good. He's such a good player. Forget it. But he's also much bigger than me and stronger, so.
Yeah.
As long as he doesn't bagel me, I don't care.
Right.
Do you play tennis?
I play paddle tennis down at Venice Beach.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you that. I actually heard that, and I was going to write down pickleball because I play pickleball.
Not pickleball. No. It's the same court. It's the same size court, but it's...
But the ball is different.
Yeah, it's a tennis ball. You guys play with a wiffle ball, right?
Right, and yours is a deflated tennis ball.
Yes, you put a hypodermic... It's so funny because every paddle tennis player has a hypodermic needle in his bag to pop the ball. And anyways, why do you have a fucking hypodermic needle?
I never knew that.
Yeah, that's how you get the air out.
I never knew that. That makes me laugh. I thought it was just like a ball pump. Yeah. But I guess there's no hole there, is there?
No, you got to pop it right on the seam. You go right in the seam with the needle. And then you squeeze the ball.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That I've played down there as well, paddle tennis. That is like, I mean, for me being from Pittsburgh, and even though I've been here for 24 years, that's like to me like, the most iconic thing you can do is play paddle tennis in Venice Beach, California. Like, how fucking lucky are we to get to do that?
I know. And I feel like that every time, especially in the summer.
Good.
Because I live like less than a mile from the beach. So me and a buddy will jump on some beach cruisers, go on the court, play a few sets, dive in the ocean, ride some waves, head home. I got an outdoor shower, jump in that, jump in the hot tub, do some grilling that night. And you're just like, there's not a day that's bad. There's nowhere in the world I'd rather go than be right here right now.
Isn't that the truth? So it's like, what do you want to go on vacation to do those things?
Yeah.
Why would you leave?
Right. What part of LA do you live in?
I live in Los Feliz, and I purposefully chose this neighborhood 24 years ago for the park. and the tennis courts.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah, it is good. I like being here. Anyway, so you also were recently seen in the hit Netflix series Santa Clarita Diet, and you co-starred in the Emmy Award-winning FX series Louis. Was that the Louis C.K.? Was that the Louis? Wait, what?
Yeah.
It was Louis C.K. Yeah.
Yeah, it was his FX show.
That's right. Interesting.
And I,
and, oh, wow.
He had another show on HBO called Lucky Louis that I was a writer on.
Mm-hmm. And how were those years? Okay.
Great. The best.
He never whacked off. I'm so sorry. I'm moving on. You guys can find Greg over at his website, gregfitzsimmons.com, and also follow him on Twitter at GregFitzShow. All right, you guys. Oh, gosh, I skipped so many credits. There are too many. You've also been a writer for Bill Maher and on the show Crashing, which, by the way, I loved Crashing. I liked that show very much. It got a little weird when Pete was like banging strippers and models.
You got
that was not believable.
No, well, that was his life, though. His real life story was he grew up Christian. He got married to somebody from his theology college. And then when they split up, he went kind of nuts. And, you know,
he caught her banging a guy. Like, he saw it with his eyes. And then the couple tried to rationalize it. Like, his girlfriend tried to say, well, look, I know this is bumming you out, but let's just sit down and talk.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
And then they become friends in the series. They become like his best friends, his ex-wife and the guy she's banging.
And Lauren Lapkus. Brilliant.
Great. Yeah. She's fantastic.
So did you write on that? Was it three seasons?
Yeah, three seasons. I wrote on two out of the three seasons.
I really liked that. I really did. I thought that was a great show. Anyway, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Greg Fitzsimmons.
Hey now. All right, so let me tell you a story. Isn't that why we're here? Tell you a story. A lot of my best stories come from when I started out as a comedian in Boston back in like starting in about 89. So back then, the place was just packed with great comics. You know, it was like, we played softball games on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it was like David Cross, Mark Maron, Bill Burr, Joe Rogan, Laura Keitlinger, Patrice O'Neill, Bobby Kelly. It was just crazy. Anthony Clark. And so there were so many comics that the agents would rip you off, basically. And there was a guy at the time named Billy Downs, and he always owed everybody money. You'd work for him, but then he wouldn't pay you, and then he'd try to pay you like pennies on the dollar later. So instead of Bill Downs, they called him No Money Downs. And so it was always like, and he would just fuck with you. He'd call you up and he'd be like, hey, big guy, I got a gig for you. It's up in Maine. It's 5 hours. You got to pick up the headliner. You got to share a hotel room with the other opener, and you get half off dinner, $150. You want it? And then you'd be like, oh God. And you'd be like, all right, I'll do it. And you'd go, it's canceled.
What? He was in the same conversation.
Same conversation. Just to see how much he could talk you down, just for sport.
Oh.
So he really does get me this gig one time. And at this point, the guy owes me like $1,000, which is a lot of work for me at that point. I literally just started out and I'm trying to live off my stand-up comedy money. So he sends me up to this gig in Maine. It's 5 hours. I pick up the headliner, the other opening act, and we get up there. And Billy shows up. He's the guy's got so much fucking money because he's taking the entire budget on most of these shows. And he's got a Mercedes. He's got Chinese kids that he adopted. All the trappings of wealth in Boston. And so you would go, it was so bad that people would show up to his bank on Monday mornings because his checks would all bounce. So like you would try to get to his bank at 9:01 in the morning and there'd already be a line of comedians waiting to cash the check, hoping that it wouldn't bounce. Just guys with greasy hair, hungover. And you'd get to the cashier and she'd look at you and you'd have on like a, you know, like a Stitches Comedy Club hat. And she'd be like, Bill Downs check. And you'd be like, yeah. And she's like, good luck. I'll give it a shot. And so, I go up to this gig and it's at a place called the Laughing Lobster up in like Bangor, Maine. And we go in and there's a giant lobster on top of a restaurant and there's a condo and the headliner, I'm not the headliner, this guy, Kevin Knox is. And so he's got this 2-bedroom condo and me and the opener are in this like little windowless studio. And so we would go to the restaurant and they give us a meal. We got half off. The opener's got half off and we had to order from the left side of the menu. And then Kevin could order whatever he wanted. And he would just bust our balls. He'd be like, hey, you guys want to get the lobster? Oh, sorry, you can't. You can't. did you guys see that thing on HBO? Oh, you don't have cable. And so we go down and there was a pool. And it was because it was so far north, it was a lot of like French Canadians and they would come down and like women in thongs and they were beautiful. And we're like, all right, we're going down to the pool, guys. Let's get. And I go, oh shit. I didn't pack a bathing suit. And so Kevin goes, well, just, you got some boxer shorts? He goes, just put on your boxer shorts. So I was like, I don't know. And so I go, you guys just go down. So they go down to the pool. And I can see the pool from my window and it's filled with hot chicks. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm putting on the boxer shorts. So I put them on and I remember they had chili peppers on them. And I walk down to the pool in my boxer shorts and I open up the gate and they're sitting on the far side of the pool. And I take 2 steps in and I'm standing on the deck. And then Kevin stands up and he goes, Greg, what are you doing wearing your underwear? And the whole pool starts laughing at me. So I walk back to my room in my chili pepper underwear. And so we go to the show that night and it's in the back room of the Laughing Lobster. There's no stage. It's just you standing with a microphone in a room full of people that are eating lobsters, which, you know, it's an involved meal. Usually you play to people that have like chicken fingers, finger food, where they can actually pay attention. Lobster is that's your priority when you get it, not listening to the comedian. And there's no light on this. There's no spotlight. There's a Bruins game. There's a Red Sox game playing above our heads on the TV set. And they don't turn it off because, you know, Boston, they're such sports fans like Pittsburgh. And so, so I go, before I go on stage, Billy's sitting there. And I go, ah, shit, Billy, I forgot my watch. I don't want to go long. Let me borrow your watch. So he gives me this gold watch. And I go up on stage and I do my set. And then I get off stage and I duck out the side door. And I just kind of disappear. And I wait for the show to end. The other guys come out. We jump in the car, drive back to Boston. I get a call the next day from Billy Downs. He goes, hey, big guy, you accidentally left my watch last night. And I go, no, Billy, you accidentally didn't pay me the $1,000 that you owe me. And so he goes, oh, shit. I go, well, I appraised the watch for $2,000, so we can just call it a wash and I'll work the rest off. And so we made a deal that he was going to meet me at a Dunkin' Donuts in Kenmore Square. And I said, I want cash. I don't want a fucking check. I want cash. And so he shows up and he's got like a brown bag stuffed with cash and he hands it to me. It's all like fives. He was like busting my balls. It's all like fives and ones. And so I get the money and he goes, that's pretty good, big guy. You got me. I was like, yeah, thanks, Billy. Like there was a respect for the scam. He respected the scam. And then as he's walking out, he looks at me and he goes, what are you doing next weekend, big guy? And I go, nothing. I'm open. He goes, you want to do Uncle Nasty's down in Providence? it pays $75. And I was like, fuck yeah, man. I've never done Uncle Nasty's. I've always wanted to. I'm there.
And then did he say canceled?
No, he didn't say
canceled. That is unbelievable. Did you really appraise it? What kind of watch?
It was a gold. I don't know if it was a Rolex, but it was like a nice. I mean, this guy, he had like a big ass Mercedes, like a 5 Series Mercedes. And that was the thing that a lot of the comedians got to them was that he flaunted it. And yeah. that he had somehow having adopted Chinese kids was like a sign of wealth. It was like having a Rolex.
Like he owned them, like he collected them.
Yeah, right.
But his house is probably shit. You know, so many people put money. I mean, it not so many, but people do. There are people.
Yeah.
There are people, though, that put it all into the car. So it looks a certain way. And they're making a presentation and whatever. And then their house is nothing.
But he should have been hiding that money because the comedians, that's the only way we knew how much he was taking out of these budgets.
Wow.
I mean, these shows, they would have 200 people show up and pay $20 each. So that's, what is that, $4,000?
$4,000, yeah.
And then he would pay the headliner $150. The feature would get $75 and the opener would get $50. And all the rest went into his pocket. There was no advertising because, like, this was during the comedy
boom.
There
was nothing else to do. Oh, yeah, that too, yeah.
All you had to do was put a sign up that said comedy on a Chinese restaurant on a Tuesday night, and it would fill up with 200 people.
That's unbelievable. And then you also think about the bar. I mean, how much money they're making at a bar.
Well, that was the deal, was that they would book the club, the bar would keep the money from the booze, and they would just keep the ticket sales.
Oh.
But all cash.
Wow.
They claimed about 10% of that shit on their taxes.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. Yeah. When you think about those days, because I know you've performed everywhere, is there anything that you really, I mean, now during COVID, we miss everything, but are there any of those, like, you know, those just crazy gigs that you think like, yeah, that was fun. I mean, I mean the odd ones. Like one time Kevin Nealon told me about performing in Point Barrow, Alaska. I think Bob Saget told him to go there. By the way, I heard you on Bob Saget and it was like a love fest at the end there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He said he loved you so many times.
He's such a sweet guy. Yeah. He was just, he's a mensch, you know, he's just something. I love Jews. I married one.
Yeah.
And they're just, there's something about them that's very like effusive and loyal. And I don't know. They just say their feelings more than like, I'm Irish Catholic. You barely hug. You know?
I can't believe you just said that. That is so true because my boyfriend is Jewish and his mother is a therapist and his father is a therapist. They're both elderly, but still. And he totally gets that. And I grew up Italian Catholic and nobody talked about anything.
I
find him so refreshing because he'll just put it out on the table and it's like, oh, so you're an adult. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's so great.
Yeah. And his wife is very lucky. I know that he cherishes her. He treats her like a real partner. And, you know, he's a lot of his friends he's had forever. I mean, that to me is at the end of your life, I mean, you want to look back and say, I had friends that I had for a long time because you can't replace that. Yeah. You know, you can always make new friends, but there's something about, like me and Mike Gibbons, there's something about having that shorthand about that life that you've lived together. And I've been married now for 21 years. And that's the thing I value in my life more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, that is, and that's at the end of the day, all there really is, because you and I both know people that are, you know, more than millionaire, maybe not more, but have a ton of money and are completely, completely not happy people. I mean, at the end of the day, it isn't about that. It can't be about that. Now, that being said, I want a washer dryer. I don't think that's that much to ask.
A washer dryer should be like universal health coverage. They should give you an insurance card and a washer dryer every 6 months.
And a lot of quarters.
You know you don't need those in your house, right?
Well, I don't, but I'm in an apartment, and downstairs in the laundry room, you better believe I need quarters. And so,
well, I'm saying when you get the one in your house,
yeah,
you're not going to need quarters anymore.
Believe me, it's on the vision board, Greg Fitzsimmons.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, let me ask you, your experience with Sirius XM. I mean, that must have been, and it was called the Greg Fitzsimmons Show.
Right. Yeah.
And was that a highlight of your life? I mean, it had to have been, yes?
Not really. It was like, you know, what's nice is they sort of just give you the keys and they say lock up when you're done. They don't give you any notes. But the listenership is not huge. You think it's going to be, but I was on Howard Stern's channel and people are there to listen to Howard Stern. And so I got like, it helped me launch my pod. There was enough people that when I started my podcast, I automatically had like a nice size audience,
yeah,
just from the serious people, but it never built. I just sort of felt like I did it for 10 years.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's a good amount of time.
It was because it was my Monday night. Like as a comic, I'd go on the road on Thursday, come back on a Sunday. And then every Monday night, I would have stuff to talk. I'd talk about what happened that weekend. And
where did you record? You know,
at their studio. Well, they had studios in Hollywood, but then I have a guest house that I turned into a studio behind my house, and then people would come there.
Nice.
And so they had they installed special wiring so that it would go through to them.
Now they have a brand new facility, Sirius.
Yeah, then I started doing it there because I just found that guests, it was easier on the guests to not have to drive out to Venice.
Yeah.
So I started in Hollywood studio.
Yeah, and then also you don't have to worry about people parking and there's right. probably like waters and stuff. That's always...
Those waters?
You know, there's stuff around. You know what I mean? Like there's like, you know, amenities when you're in a facility. Do you know what I mean?
I was able to buy bottled waters in my house.
I hear you, but I'm just saying, by the way, do you think that that there's always going to be a virtual aspect now? I mean, to this whole game. I mean, who's...
I think it would be crazy to think people are going to get in their cars again and drive to do a podcast. I mean, I feel like there's more connection, but not necessarily. I feel pretty connected when I'm talking to people on Skype.
I do too. It's been a learned thing though, because before yeah. I started doing this, like that was one of my things is that I never had anybody on the show that I wasn't in person with. You know what I mean? I always made sure I was in person, but now that it's this way, of course, it's opened up a lot more people. That's for sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Definitely. I find it's easier to book people that, especially if they live way up in the valley or whatever, then. And they'll jump on, and especially if it's people that already have podcasts because they've got the whole
yeah.
setup.
Or yeah. people in New York or anywhere else for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
How was Artie Lang when you were doing that gig with him at Carnegie Hall?
At that point, he was fat. He was fat and sweaty. He was struggling. He was... I remember he got off stage and his whole front of his shirt was soaking. And it was like, you know, Artie and I used to go, every time I ever did the Howard Stern show, we would go downstairs to the Brooklyn Diner and we would have breakfast. And this was because I knew Artie before I ever did Stern and before he ever did Stern. We were good friends from the comedy club. As a matter of fact, when Jackie the Joke Man left the show, it became like, they called it Jackie's chair and who's going to take Jackie's chair.
Yeah, of course.
So they started rotating in comedians and, you know, Doug came in a lot. Jeff Ross came in a lot.
I remember.
Nick DiPaolo came in a lot. And then it started winnowing down where they would start bringing me in for the whole week. And then they'd bring Artie in for the whole week. And it was me against Artie. Who was going to get it? And Artie's coming in and he's telling stories about Hooker stealing coke off his dresser and how he just lost 10 grand on the Giants game. And I'm coming in like, yeah, my wife didn't have sex with me last night. He's like, I'm not
kidding. Yeah. Yeah. You can't compete.
And I was, as a listener, I was so glad he got it because he was always, always one of the greatest storytellers of all time.
Yeah. Because it never stops because there were so many highs and so many lows.
Yeah.
And now I don't think he and Howard, they have no relationship,
right? No.
That sucks, man. I mean, I guess it does and it doesn't. I mean, I'm sure Howard doesn't care, but when you are a fan of the show and you see the whole entirety of it, you know, it kind of bums you out. Yeah. Even Jackie the Joke Man, it's sort of like, believe me, I don't miss that fucking song, that jingle that always played.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I hated that jingle. And I never thought he was funny anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying there's something about the people that are involved that, you know, you do kind of get attached to.
Oh, it's very intimate. I mean, listening to that show, I mean, I'm always like pulling up to my house and staying in the car for another 10 minutes because, you know,
definitely.
Even guys like Bobo, I still find interesting. I still like Jeff the Drunk. Any of the Whack Packers. I mean,
I know.
I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, each person's relationship to each other and they all know how to play that up. And, you know, when Marianne from Brooklyn calls in, you know that the energy is about to explode because of.
I love her so much. And I do love when they do the cuckoo, cuckoo in the background. Right. And I also would never turn off Wendy the Retard. She's just so genuine.
Yeah.
She's very genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely love the show. I still listen to it constantly, although his schedule is so funny now because, you know, obviously you can do anything you want. So he's on like 6 days a month.
Well, it used to be 5 days a week for 5 hours a day. And now it's
ridiculous.
Now it's 3 days a week for 3 hours a day. So guys like me don't get brought in anymore. You don't see Apollo. Yeah. I mean, Colin Quinn once in a blue moon, Dave Attell once in a blue moon. But otherwise, there were like 10 of us that used to come in on a regular basis. And there's just no space for that anymore.
But I think it's even more than that in just in terms of the way he's evolved, because now he's almost like to get a one-on-one interview with him is a big deal. And he only does biggest, you know, biggest names. And so it's sort of changed. So now it's like Whack Pack and then flipping who's been on
Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be big and it's always going to be really interesting too. I'm trying to think, oh, Tom Brady, Jesus, that was incredible.
Did he have Tom Brady on?
Yeah. That he changed around. People were thinking it really just about a month ago. And it really had an impact on how people thought of him because a lot of people hated him before. And now the Stern crowd has kind of turned toward him.
Oh no, he's the cleanser. He's the cleanser. You know, Ellen DeGeneres comes in and all of a sudden people are DeGeneres and Rosie O'Donnell, all of a sudden they love Rosie O'Donnell. Like, the smartest thing somebody can do with a bad reputation is to go on Stern Show.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Rosie O'Donnell. I really like her a lot.
Mm.
you just said that to me in a way that you don't like her.
Yeah, I mean, all these daytime queens. You know, I worked for Ellen DeGeneres. I was a writer for the first two seasons of that show.
Wow.
Yeah, picked up a little hardware from that.
I see. Oh, my God. 3 Emmys. Gosh, you have 3 Emmys from the Ellen DeGeneres show. I didn't even mention that. Listen to me. Sorry.
There's four. I gave one to my mom.
Oh, that was nice of you.
But they're evil people. You know, they're just the whole facade is gross. And I know people that worked on Rosie and it's the same thing.
That bums me out.
Yeah, but you're nice.
I know, but it still bums me out. And I definitely know that I can get really agitated when people don't move. Listen, now I'm showing you my true side. No, when somebody's trying to help me out and they're not moving quickly enough, I get really, I lose patience because I think that they know what I know. And it's not fair. I know that.
So, interesting.
I know. It's not right. I know. It's not right. But sometimes it's like, do I have to do everything myself? And it's like, no, you just have to fucking let go of some power because you're going to get a better return anyway, you know?
Right, right.
So I'm learning. I'm learning. Yeah. Anyway. Hey, I'm really happy to talk with you, man. Really. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really good to meet you. I made a good friend today.
Yeah, thanks. And I'll definitely get you on Story Smash. Oh, my gosh. Pee your pants laughing. I can't wait. I'll book you right away.
Okay.
All
fantastic.
Right. Thanks so much, Greg. Listen, you guys, make sure you follow Greg over there on Twitter at Greg Fitz Show, and then follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. Tell Greg you liked his story, and then he'll say, oh, thank you so much, and that'll be a nice connection for you. All right, you guys, one more time, on behalf of the very talented Greg Fitzsimmons, thanks so much for tuning in, Greg. Thanks.
It's my pleasure.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a Storyworthy week. You can't.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.